Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and along with me is the co-host of this program, Sai Prakash. So we are still in the first chapter of Prema Vahini. We had done about 5 paragraphs of the first chapter, and probably we'll just listen to the 5th paragraph again, because that is where we were in the last episode, and we'll move on from there.
మనము చేయు పనుల వల్లనే అలవాట్లు కలుగును, అలవాట్ల వల్లనే బుద్ధి స్థిరపడును. మనము యోచించడి ఊహలు, ఉద్దేశ్యములు, చేసడి పనులు చిత్తమందు బాగుగా ముద్రించబడును. వీటి వల్లనే మానవునకు ప్రపంచ స్పృహ కలుగును. మానవునకు ప్రస్తుత స్థితి పూర్వజన్మ పరిణామమే. ఈ అలవాట్లే మానవుని గుణములను తయారు చేయును. ఎట్టి స్వభావములనైనను ఊహలు, అభ్యాసముల వల్ల మార్చుకునవచ్చును.
హ్యాబిట్స్ ఫార్మ్ ఓన్లీ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ ద డీడ్స్ వీ ఇండల్జెన్. దీస్ హ్యాబిట్స్ షేప్ ద ఇంటెలిజెన్స్. ఆల్ దట్ వీ వీవ్ ఇన్ ఆర్ ఇమాజినేషన్, ఆర్ ఆస్పిరేషన్స్ అండ్ డీడ్స్ leave an indelible imprint on the mind. Due to these, man makes his own perception of the world. Man's present condition is the result of his past birth. These habits mold man's character. Whatever be the nature, just by the process of imagination and practice, it can be modified.
So that is what Bhagwan is saying here.
Yeah, this is what I think we played last time as well. And we said that whatever actions we do, habits are formed. So, here what Swami is saying is, whatever actions and whatever imaginations we have, this gets imprinted in the chitta. He said, all that actions we do and whatever we understand of the world, he says, whatever actions we do, habits are formed from the actions, and whatever habits we form, they form the foundation of our buddhi or our intelligence. So what happens is, we see the world through the habits that we form. And it's like this, like when Swami says, if you wear a red glass, you see the whole world as red. If you wear a green glass, you see the whole world as green. So the word imagination and uha here is very important. And it almost comes to the same explanation that he says, these get imprinted in the chitta. Now we learnt from many of Swami's discourses that the mind has 4 aspects. Mano, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. So, manas is the aspect of the mind which tries to see the world and understand what it is. Buddhi is the discriminative power. Chitta is the one that forms the memory. So, he says, whatever you see and whatever you make of what you see gets imprinted in your chitta, which is that part of your mind which deals with memory. So, like for example, for the first time, if somebody were to walk into our studio and they had no idea of what the studio is and where to turn. So our studio is quite a maze.
Yes.
So you walk in, suddenly people are wondering, oh my God, there's a turning even this way. There's a turning that
get
way.
Lost.
People get quite lost.
Yes.
And, but for us who have come in several times, we know where to take the left, where to take the right. So what Swami is saying is, you are creating your world of understanding based on your imagination.
Yes.
And what gets imprinted in your memory. Now, suppose 2 people enter the studio and one person thinks, wow, this is an amazing place. Another person comes in and thinks, my God, what a horrible place. It's so stuffy and it's so crowded. Both have entered the same place. But what they infer from what they are seeing is based on what they register in their memories.
Yes.
So,
and as you also mentioned, this imagination is a very interesting word here. And if you look at this paragraph, yes, Swami says that our habit form because of our deeds, mm-hmm. and that's what get imprinted in our mind, and that is how we create our own world. But the good thing about it, here Swami is saying, but you can change it.
Exactly.
Just by the process of imagination and practice, you can change it.
Right.
So there is this power of habit.
Exactly. No, it is like this. Now, for example, let's just go with the same analogy. Now, the person who is coming in into the studio and thinks, oh, this place is not so great. I mean, it's so stuffy. He's only going to feel unhappy, or he's going to feel, you know, irritated by it. But if a person comes and feels, oh, this is so nice, he's going to feel happy about it. So, if the person who's feeling irritated about it, if he wants to change his outlook, he can change. It's just an imagination.
Yes.
His approach and his imagination, he says, oh, yeah, I felt it was stuffy, but looks like people are here, they are happy about it. Maybe it's really a nice place. So, he can change. He can. So, what happens is, then he is happy.
Yes.
Like,
I'm reminded of Albert Einstein's quote, mm-hmm. who says there are two ways of looking at the world.
Yes.
Either everything is a miracle for you, or right. nothing is a miracle.
Exactly. That's true. In fact, in a very, very, slightly in a different context, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says, somebody asks, if God is everything, then why is there good and bad? I mean, we see good and bad every time. We see wars, we see unhappiness, we see this, we see pain, we see misery. At the same time, we see happiness, we see, why is there so much of, you know, good and bad? Then, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says, when you go to a place, you may get good smell, or you may get a foul smell. But the air is not affected by it.
Wow.
The air
is not affected.
Is not affected by the smell. You are affected by the smell. See, that's the subtlety. Everything is God.
Yes.
Everything is God. So, yes. What Swami says is, you create the world.
Yes.
Based on your imagination.
Yes.
And that's the whole crux of our daily life.
Yeah, because we have our own boxes and exactly. our own limitations. In fact, on one occasion while speaking to students, Swami said, see, there is this beautiful apple. Mm-hmm. You know, today when it's outside of you,
yes,
this apple is fantastic.
Right.
You like it. And, you know,
I know what's coming next.
Yeah. So, you know, tomorrow you consume it and then it turns into something else.
Right.
And now you despise it.
Yes.
And you despise it now, because, you know, for you, there is this differentiation of outside and inside.
Correct.
But for, Swami says, for God, there is no such differentiation of outside and inside, because He pervades everything.
Right.
So, there is nothing like good or bad for Him.
Mm. In fact, it's very interesting, because Swami goes on further to explain this concept with the story of Narada.
Yeah.
You are aware of that.
Yeah.
Narada is asking Lord Vishnu, I think it's worthwhile just mentioning
yeah, sure.
that.
Please go ahead.
So he says, Lord, the whole creation is yours. I mean, how can there be good or bad in this world? Then Lord says, everything is good. There is no bad. Then Narada says, No, I see so many, I get newspaper, I get television, I get the WhatsApp message, I get so many calamities happening in the world, and I see so many things going wrong in the world. If Narada was telling Vishnu today,
the modern
this is
Narada.
What he would be saying to Lord
century
Vishnu.
Narada.
Yeah, and Vishnu says, no. Okay, you tell me one thing which is absolutely bad in the world. Then Narada says, he just thinks for some time and he says, the human feces,
yes,
it's very foul smelling and it is a waste material and it is so bad. And Narada says, then Lord Vishnu says, okay, go and meet, go and see, explore and tell me. So he comes to the earth, and as he goes, there is this human waste, human feces is there on the ground. And as he is going near that, it says, don't come near me. Don't you bad man, don't come near me. Don't come near me.
Feces is rejecting him.
And Narada was spellbound. He said, what? What is going on here? So he was like totally amazed. And then when he actually asked, why are you shouting? Mm. He says, I was such a good apple yesterday.
Company.
You know, yesterday I was such a beautiful apple. I was so red in color, so juicy I was. And today, see, I have come in contact with you and this is what I have become. Now, if you come close to me, I don't know what I'll become.
What else will become?
So, the whole, and you know, this is the basis of everything, where he says, Manomulam idam jagat. The whole world is your mind, is a reflection of your mind. And so, if you get angry with somebody, that's because there is anger in you.
Yes.
If you love somebody, because there is love in you. If you hate somebody, there is hatred in you. So, Swami says, reflection, reaction, resound. So, he says, we are born with certain tendencies. So, there are certain people who may tend to be more angry or more rajasic or more tamasic by nature. But there is an option to modify that and change that.
Yes.
I think that is where...
I think that is very interesting. In fact, before we go on, I was just reading a book which says Power of Habit. You know, at a very practical level, this author, Charles Duhigg, he gives some tips how to change your habits and how to become more effective.
Okay.
And so he says that the one way of doing it is to make micro quotas and macro goals.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So basically you're saying, you know, people have this big picture, the macro goal, what you want to achieve. Mm. And you make the minimum amount of work that you have to do to achieve that goal. So there's the micro quota for that macro goal. So you slowly make those changes, small, small incremental changes in your habits to achieve that major goal. And like, for example, you know, suppose I want to, say, become a writer. So, that is the sort of macro goal.
Right.
So, micro quota will be, you know, you cultivate this habit that every day, whatever it is, you know, I will write, say, 500 words.
Correct.
Every day. Mm. So, this is on a very physical plane, you know, when it comes to material ambitions. But I think it's the same for spiritual stuff.
Correct.
You want to purify yourself. So, similarly, he gives another nice tip. He says, eliminate excessive options. He says, there is a great power in actually being boring.
Okay. And interesting.
Yeah. There's a great power in being boring. And the example that he gives is Barack Obama, President Obama. President Obama always insists on wearing nothing but blue and gray suits. Mm. And according to him, he says, I'm only paring down my decisions. Because I don't want to make too many decisions about what I'm eating, what I'm wearing. Because there are so many other important things where I have to spend my time, energy, making decisions. So why spend time, you know, making decisions about these routine things? And I thought Swami has really made simpler for all of us if wearing only white.
White and white.
I don't have to really spend time in the morning thinking, you know, what I'm going to wear today, what is matching, not matching.
Very true, very true. You cut out all that is not essential.
Not essential.
So that you can focus on what is essential. And in the process of focusing on what is actually essential, the whole world falls apart.
Yeah.
Nothing in the world is important for you
yes.
as long as you are able to completely focus on what is essential.
Essential, yeah.
So that's a long way
to go. These things are inconsequential, not essential. And there's similarly, the another tip he gives is create behavior chains.
Okay.
So basically what he says is, you know, perhaps you have a habit. So instead of starting another habit, whatever habit you have, you just add one more thing to that. That is perhaps easier. Like, for example, if you're getting up, somehow you're getting up in the morning at a particular time, then you can decide to, okay, I will, perhaps as soon as I get up, I will just do this thing. Maybe, something like that, you know. whatever good habit you have, if you're getting up early, then maybe just do one more thing. So that way you can help to cultivate your new habits. And the last thing that he says is process plan. So basically many times, you know, we have all these self-development courses where they ask you to visualize what you want to be. And, you know, we have people who have stuck this dream house that they want to have in their walls, and every day they see that and visualize that. And it does happen for many people. What you intensely visualize, it perhaps happens. But what he says is, it is not only important to visualize the end goal, but you visualize the process. Like suppose you want to be an expert, say, violin player. You visualize the process of everyday practicing for half an hour. I think that is what will help you to reach your goal. That will help you to reduce your anxiety. And that will help you to plan. Now, I was thinking all these tips, you know, which are very good for, you know, your material sort of ambitions. But they apply so much for your spiritual growth too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's that's why in the Vedas it said, Gyatum Drashtum Praveshtum. Means first you should know. Know what it is. Then, you know, then you see and believe it. Then you enter into practice.
Yes.
So, like in a very simple way, Swami was explaining to Dr. John Hislop. He said, Swami, when will we reach? I mean, we want to reach the goal of our, realize the purpose of our life and reach the end. When will we actually reach it? And Swami said, now what are we doing? We both are in a car. And we are going towards Anantapur. We are on the right road.
Yes.
That's all is important.
Yes.
You will reach Anantapur.
You're on that road.
You're on the road. Yes. Make sure you're on the right road.
Yes.
So as long as you know that you are on the right road and you know that you are, what you are doing is according to what Swami has said or whomever you believe in or a prompting that comes from within, then just do it, continue, and you will be there.
Yes. So once you have taken that plunge, you are on that flight.
Exactly.
So it's cruising. So you don't have to really worry. So I think that's what Bhagwan is conveying in the fifth paragraph. Shall we move on to the next one?
Oh, yes.
చెడ్డవారు ఎల్లప్పుడూ చెడ్డవారుగానే ఉండరు. అంగుళీమాలుడనే బందిపోటు దొంగ బుద్ధుని దర్శన మాత్రమున మంచివాడుగా మారలేదా? రత్నాకరుడనే దొంగ వాల్మీకిగా మారలేదా? అట్టివారి మానసిక లక్షణములు ఊహలు మారెను కదా. మానవునకు తన చెడుగుణములు చెడు ప్రవర్తనలు మార్చుకునే శక్తి వాని వెంటనే ఉండును. నిష్కామ సేవ, వైరాగ్యము, భక్తి, ప్రార్థన, విచారణ కొత్త స్వభావములను నేర్పించును. ఇట్టి స్వభావములు వీని మార్గములు సులభముగా వ్యాఖ్యానించి లోకమునకు చాటుటకే ఇట్టి ఆధ్యాత్మిక గ్రంథములు, కావ్యములు, పత్రికలు ప్రచురించుట. పేరు ప్రతిష్టలకు కాని, విద్యా కౌశలమును చూపుకొనుటకు కాని, పాండిత్యమును ప్రదర్శించుకొనుటకు కాని కాదు.
A bad person will not remain bad always. Did not Angulimala, the dacoit, turn into a good person just by the darshan of Buddha? Did not the thief Ratnakara become Valmiki, the sage? Isn't it that such people's habits and character got transformed? Man has within him the capacity to change his evil propensities and evil habits. Selfless service, renunciation, devotion, prayer, inquiry, these will enable inculcation of new swabhava or conduct. In order to lucidly explain to the world this new swabhava and the ways of attaining it, spiritual literature, epics and periodicals are published. It is done not for the exhibition of erudition or showcasing the scholarship or for name and fame.
So a bad person will not remain bad always.
That's true. So there is a lot of hope.
There is a lot of hope.
That is if the person wants to. And this is again the classic question of like Angulimala. Did he know that he is going to be a transformed person seconds before he met Lord Buddha. He might not be aware of it. But was he in some way ready for it? Was there some kind of a deservedness in him which brought about this transformation? Or was it so random? Was it just random?
I think, at the right time, the right message arrives to you.
Yeah, but what is it that defines the right time?
I think it is perhaps the preparedness of the soul.
That's what I asked. So, is he already prepared for it, or it was a random thing?
Well, nothing in the universe is random.
that's something we learnt even from Kung Fu Panda Part 1, the movie.
Yes.
There are no accidents.
Yes.
No, but that's true. These are questions we would like to, you know, really ponder upon and understand and try to analyze. I'm sure we are not at a level where we can give answers, but maybe in the course of what Swami is conveying to us in this Vahini series, we'll understand. There is a difference between a person who has complete knowledge of the truth, a realized soul, a jnani, when he lives in the world, what he does, why he does it, versus a person who is ignorant. So the whole approach to life and to living is different in these two people. So also, a person, when seconds before he gets that kind of an awakening versus when he is not awakened. So what is it that has driven him to that point? What is it that has, you know, prepared him to accept this kind of a change? So these are things which we have to...
Yeah, I think, see, for example, if you see what happened to Angulimala,
mm-hmm.
or say Ratnakara,
mm-hmm.
see, at many points in time, there are amazing messages that come to us, that come to so many people.
Okay.
But there are at times when a certain message, it hits you so hard. Perhaps 5 years ago, you might have heard the same message. Perhaps it would not have hit you so hard.
Okay.
But now, given whatever you have experienced in the last 5 years or 10 years, you know, so sort of destiny has prepared you. You're sort of ripe now to get the most of that moment. Like, for example, even if you see Ratnakara, it's because of all the that discussion and the impression that he had that whatever he's doing is for the benefit of the family and they are going to share the burden. He was so convinced about it.
Mm.
Perhaps 5-10 years ago, we don't know if we had that strong an understanding of that philosophy.
Right. Yeah, I think it's that moment of conviction and also a sense of earnestness.
Yes.
See, Angulimala would just finish his victims and take the thumb.
Yes.
And tie a mala around his neck with all the thumbs of people whom he had looted and robbed. When he came to Buddha, Lord Buddha, I think there was a sense of calm and there was a sense, the presence of Lord Buddha kind of stirred something within him. And at that moment, he forgot that he was a dacoit or who he was, and there was a sense of earnestness that came in him. Oh my God, is there something I'm missing out?
Yes.
Is there something? And I think it is that moment of earnestness where you're completely 100% focused on that.
Yes.
Without any other distraction. Then, you know, you get...
Yes.
You get that wisdom. And even for Ratnakara, for example, that moment of awakening was that one instant.
Yes.
But after that, he had to do the penance.
Yeah.
He had sit and he had to do the Rama Japam for... possibly many years.
I mean, that was the starting, that is the end of Ratnakara.
Yeah.
but the perhaps Valmiki was still in the womb of time.
Right.
It took so many years before Valmiki could emerge. So.
And this is also a very, very important lesson for us to ponder upon, because we cannot judge anybody.
Absolutely.
We cannot judge anybody. Like, you know, we cannot say so-and-so is a sinner, so-and-so is an angel, so-and-so is good, so-and-so is bad. There may be bad qualities in a person, but that doesn't make the person bad.
Absolutely. I mean, as very beautifully Mother Teresa said, if you begin to judge people, you will never have time to love them.
Beautiful. Very nice.
Yeah, if we begin to judge everyone, then we can never love anyone. Absolutely. Mm. And many times, I think, you know, the reason why Swami was able to love all of us was simply this. He was just not looking at our faults or our shortcomings, because I think that, you know, the world the way it is, even if you have done 100 good deeds, you do one not so pleasant deed, and the world will look at you with 10,000 eyes.
Right.
But while God, you might have done 100 not so good deeds, but you might have done only one good deed, but the Lord will look at you with 10,000 eyes, that only one good deed.
Correct.
I mean, that is the difference between the divine and the others. But what I'm trying to say is, the divine can see only good. Because he doesn't judge. Everybody is good for him. Everybody is part of him. Everybody is good for him.
That famous story of, you know, Lord Krishna tells Duryodhana and Yudhishthira,
yes,
go to the village and go and see how the kingdom is and come and tell me. And Duryodhana comes and says, those scoundrels, all of them are horrible. There's not even one good person in the whole place.
Whole kingdom.
And Yudhishthira comes and says, there is not one person who is bad. Everybody is so great. So
Duryodhana says, I am the only person I found who is really noble.
And Yudhishthira says,
I am the only person whom I have despised because I am not able to find any good qualities in me.
So, these are great lessons.
Yes.
And this again shows how everything is a reflection, reaction and resound of what we are within us, ourselves.
And the important thing, as you mentioned, is we should never judge people.
Yeah.
And then
that's very, very, very important and very important. Difficult as well.
Yeah, difficult. But I think, you know, as you also said, you know, at some point in time, that there could be moments when you do not like a particular trait in a person at that point in time. I mean, half an hour ago, perhaps I did not like Sai Prakash being angry, but that does not mean that I don't like Sai Prakash, or Sai Prakash is an eternally angry person.
Right, right.
Because I have heard this, you know, conversation that I've had with many old students. And, you know, I always ask these brothers who are working in their professions, you know, in the corporate world, how easy or difficult it is for you to live Bhagwan's teachings in real life. And this brother Pawan, he is now in Singapore. And so he was saying that, you know, yeah, there is this particular boss, and many people say that it's really extremely difficult to work with him. Okay. But he says, see, I don't go there with that mindset that, you know, it is extremely difficult to work with him. He is very uncompromising. He's unreasonable. I don't go with that attitude at all. You know, I believe that if I'm humble, if I'm polite, and as Bhagwan says, you don't have to always oblige. You can speak obligingly. Even if he asks me to do something which, you know, I differ with, I have taken that step of communicating to him with a lot of politeness and humility that perhaps, sir, this is another way you can think about it. And he said, see, there have been times when he's overruled me. Okay. There are five options, and I tell him, you know, maybe this is the way we can go. And yes, on one or two occasions, he did not like it. He did not take my advice. But soon he realized, you know, when the project progressed, that what I said was perhaps better thing to do. And then after that, you know, whenever I suggest something, he definitely gives it that much of weight. And now he says, you know, whatever you say really actually makes sense. Because, see, whatever we suggest as students, we are always thinking of the welfare of all the employees in the organization. We are thinking of the good of the organization.
Correct.
You know, so somebody who is in his right mind obviously we'll be able to see the point there, see the value there.
Mm.
So, I think it's all in our perspective. We, even if the world, whole world says, yeah, this person is very difficult to deal with, I think we should never go by that notion. Mm. We should be able to see that goodness in the other person, just like Bhagwan sees in us, and explore.
Mm. And here something Swami says which is very interesting. He says, the power to change his bad qualities and bad actions lies within man himself.
Yes.
And most of us may not reach a particular point of sudden realization.
Yes.
As Angulimala or Ratnakara did. But there are certain activities, certain actions if we do, we are on a constant road to self-improvement.
Yes.
And those are the qualities that Swami is actually mentioning here. He says, Nishkama Seva and Vairagya, that is detachment.
Yes.
Then he says, Devotion, Bhakti. Then Prarthana, that is prayer.
Yes.
And then Vicharana, that's inquiry.
Inquiry.
So he says, if you have any of these, if you have these qualities, then you are on your path to your self-improvement.
Amazing.
So, I mean, Nishkama Seva is something which is like the royal path.
Yeah.
It's the royal path. Seva, Swami says, is so simple. In fact, the joy of giving,
yes,
is so amazing.
Incomparable.
Yeah. And like, I believe Swami was once, somebody asked him, Swami, how come you are giving all the time? So I said, if you know the joy of giving, you will also do the same.
Yes, absolutely.
In fact, there was a very beautiful story which somebody just narrated to me. There was this doctor who is working in Swami's super specialty hospital, who was coming, I think from Bangalore or from elsewhere, he was driving down. And met with a very, very severe accident. And people thought there was no chance for the person, people inside, to survive. But he came out, you know, absolutely unhurt. The car went several times, turning over and all that. Miraculously, he was, you know, he escaped any injury. And that was purely Swami's grace. So he knew that Swami had absolutely protected him. And so next morning when he was sitting for darshan, he sat and he wanted to express his gratitude to Swami. So as Swami came out, Swami said, ah, kya samachar, why are you sitting here? So then he said, Swami, you have, I offer my gratitude for protecting me. Swami said, you know how the car went? And Swami gave him all the details of the accident. And Swami said, to save those who are doing Nishkama Seva is my duty.
Oh, wow.
To save. Because you are doing Seva, I have to save you.
Oh, wow.
To save those who are doing Seva.
Yeah. Seva will always save you.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. In fact, as you are narrating the story of this doctor, I am reminded of another doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Pupal Raja is from the Department of Ophthalmology.
Okay.
In our super specialty hospital. He came to Bhagwan way back in 1968. He's of Sri Lankan descent.
Okay.
And, you know, they heard about Bhagwan, and in those days they came for Bhagwan's darshan. And Swami, in that first interview, it was very interesting. They actually landed up in Vrindavan. Swami told, you go to Puttaparthi first. Anyway, you wanted to go to Puttaparthi, right? So, you go there, stay there for 3 days, and then you come to Vrindavan again.
Oh.
I don't know why, but Swami, but they did, you know, they came to Bukkapatnam in those days, you know, so difficult. It was really arduous for them. They came here, Swami was not there, but they stayed in Parthi, they saw the facilities, they enjoyed everything, whatever. They learned more about Bhagwan actually, because they didn't know anything. So Puttaparthi, they went around and they asked people. And after that, on a Thursday, Swami said, we come on a Thursday. On Thursday, they went to Vrindavan. Swami gave them interview and, you know, Swami started narrating everything about everything of their lives, and obviously they were completely taken in. And Swami, when they were leaving, Swami gave them vibhuti packets and some prasadam. And after that, Dr. Pupal Raja, he went back to Sri Lanka, and in 1971 he got a scholarship, so he went to UK to do his diploma in ophthalmology. And he was an adventurous person, as even as a college guy, you know, he was in all these sports teams, he was a captain of the football team and all that, and, you know, moving around with youngsters, he had picked up basically all the habits, so he was into everything, smoking, drinking, non-veg, he was complete, as he calls himself, a party animal. That was his usual self, and he used to really drink a lot and all that. And so, 1971, he went to UK. In 1972, one night, he suddenly had this huge palpitation in the heart, and in being a doctor, he felt that it is a heart attack. But apparently, he knew that if you take whiskey, then, you know, your arteries will dilate. And if that really happens, then it is surely a heart attack. Of course, it will come back again with severity. But if this happens, then you know that it is a heart attack.
Oh.
So in the night, he, when that happened, he woke his wife up and it would please get whiskey. And the wife brought, wife thought possibly, you know, he wants to drink all the time. So he just gave and it cooled down. So he knew it is heart attack. Then he told you, please take me to emergency. So he was taken in and he was there in the hospital for like for 4 weeks. And nearly after 2-3 months, he was out. And at that time, he was just taking Swami's Vibhuti because his condition had become so critical. They said there is no way you can do anything. So he just survived on that whiskey at that moment. He knew, diagnosed himself, and later he was just taking Swami's Vibhuti. He should always have Swami's Vibhuti in his purse, little he used to take. So this happened in 1972, and you know, he wanted, somehow he felt that Swami's grace had protected him and all that, and after that he did his, and because, but one thing that he had to face because of this sort of accident was, he lost some vision in his left eye because of that heart attack, and there was some side effects, and so because of which he realized that he's not able to do surgery properly. And so he shifted from doing surgery to clinical ophthalmology, and so he progressed on that line, and he was always wanting to come to Parthi, you know, thank Bhagwan. But that never happened because, you know, he had to get his British citizenship and all that, so that happened only in 1979.
Okay.
So then in 1980 he came to Parthi, and Swami called them for an interview, and as soon as he went in, you know, he prostrated at Swami and at his feet, and he, you know, thanked Swami. Swami said, I know, whiskey vibhuti, Swami said. This happened like 9 years ago.
Wow.
He was like totally stunned. And then, you know, Bhagwan started narrating, and, you know, he felt so grateful. Actually, the reason why I remember this whole episode is what Swami told him at this moment, because he felt so grateful to Bhagwan for everything he means to him. He told Swami, tell me what I can do for you, Swami. Anything, Swami, I want to do something for you. Swami said, do selfless service with love.
Wow.
Do selfless service with love. That's all I want. And of course, after that, eventually he got the chance to work in Swami's super speciality hospital. That's another big story. When the ophthalmology department started, he was among the first people who joined. That happened in 95. No, Swami was preparing him from 1968. But the interesting thing is, the other very important reason why this incident remains in my mind is, in 1983, there was this international Sai conference in Rome.
Okay.
And, you know, after that, he got involved with the organization, even in the UK, even though he had these habits, but, you know, he used to get involved because he had fallen in love with Bhagwan and all that. So, he was the president of one Wimbledon Center in the UK. So, he had also gone as a representative of that center to attend this conference. We know about this conference. It was a very famous conference, this conference in Rome.
Yes.
Mr. Craxi had organized it and all. And, you know, one of the, there were a lot of stalls and symposiums, and one of the symposiums had the theme Ceiling on Desires. And there, you know, as he sat there, he kept on thinking about, you know, how much is he practicing, and it bothered him, you know, that he still has his habits. He was still smoking and he was still drinking. He still was taking non-veg. And it was categorically told in that conference that Swami has said, if you want to do seva, do seva only from the savings you make after putting a ceiling on your desires.
Mm.
It is not just for the sake of seva.
Mm.
If you save any money curtailing your desires, then use that money to do seva.
Seva. Okay.
So he said, you know, what should I do now?
Mm.
You know? And so that moment, he felt very sorry with his life. And before he took the plane to come to Heathrow, he made this sincere prayer to Bhagwan. Swami, please Swami, I want to give up these three habits. Please help me. I am not able to do it, because he had tried so many times earlier to leave these habits, and just that craving was so much, because, you know, from these like school days he was into all this. He would leave it for like 2 weeks, 5 weeks, one
again,
month, and just get back. Just cannot control. And when he was in the plane, when he just stepped into the plane, he prayed to Swami, please Swami, please help me get rid of these three habits. And he says, when he landed in Heathrow, all the craving had just gone.
Wow.
He said, I don't know how it happened.
Mm.
But suddenly, I just never had that craving. I don't know how it happened. No craving for non-veg, no craving for drinks, no craving for smoking. I've never touched it after that 1983.
My goodness.
Means, you know, I was thinking, see, on one hand, yes, you need so much effort. Maybe as you are saying, that your earnestness was perhaps
that,
there.
That moment of prayer, that prayer. Swami says prarthana, bhakti.
Prayer.
And yeah, that prayer which he had, in fact, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says somewhere, I think in the Gospel, he says, Kali Yuga, it is so easy to attain God. Only thing is, one day and one night, if you think of nothing except God, God will appear to you.
Wow.
He says that. One day and one night, continuously you think only of God and pine for Him. That's enough. He's there.
True. And in fact, I think anyone who has done this, I think with Bhagwan, you don't even need like one day and one night. Just for 3 hours, 2-3 hours also, if you're not doing anything and just seriously thinking, you know, Swami will give you some sign. Because, you know, I always imagine it like this. It is like that closed door, you know. There is, even if there is a slightest hole, you know, how
right.
The sun's rays somehow
reach through. Right.
I feel Swami is like that. He's just waiting.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I think all these ways that Bhagwan has given is so profound. Selfless service, renunciation, devotion, prayer, enquiry. And you know, this Pupala Raja's experience to me is a beautiful demonstration of what just a simple earnest prayer can do. It can just change your life.
Exactly.
And you know, when you were talking about this transformation, Ratnakara's transformation, that time, that timing of it, and you know, I was really reminded of another story of a Sai youth. You know, it has so much parallel. It is like a modern day episode.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. You also know him, Vijay Soni.
Okay.
He is from Indore.
Yes.
And this Vijay Soni, sir, he was during the 1980, 84, 85, you know, he wrote the state civil services examination for Madhya Pradesh.
Okay.
And he was very clear why he wanted to do that. He wanted to become a sales tax officer, and he was very clear why he wanted to be a sales tax officer. He said that is the best profession if you want to become rich quick.
Okay.
So, and he did pass the exam and he became a sales tax officer, and you know, so quickly learned the ropes of the game. And so every day home, he used to come back with that extra cash, and there were a lot of seniors who told him how to go about this. So he was really, you know, very happy doing whatever he was doing. And you know, he knew how to extract respect. People were very afraid. Nobody dare not displease him, because he can ruin their businesses, you know. So that's how he was at that point in time. And one astrologer met him during this time, 84-85, and he said, in 94-95 your life is going to change. So he thought, okay. So, which means, by that time I would have got some promotions and I'll become a flying squad. The flying squad in sales tax department means, you know, they are the people who do the surprise checks.
Okay.
You know, these raids.
Right.
And they have really amazing avenues of making really huge amounts.
Okay.
So he said, I'm going to really become a flying squad. You know, the amount of money I'm going to earn is going to really go up 10 times.
Mm.
So he was very happy about it. Because that is the only way life can go. And then, in 1992, he had a daughter. And in Indore, at that point in time, the Satya Sai Vidya Vihar was known for its quality, even today.
Right.
I mean, even today, the Indore school is known for its
quality of education.
Quality of education. In fact, that road is named as Satya Sai Marg because of the school.
Oh.
Whole of Indore, if they know that Marg, it is because of the performance of the school. So, he wanted to get the best of education, so his daughter joined there. And after his daughter joined there, you know, then, you know, there were people saying all kinds of things about Swami. And he thought, oh my God, my daughter has joined here. I better know about this person, you know, because everything is happening in his name. What kind of a guy he is. And it's better, you know, I'm aware of what my daughter is getting into. And so that's how, you know, he's as an exploratory sort of act. He went to the Samitis, you know, attended bhajans and all that, just trying to know more about Swami. And he was listening to all these interesting things about Swami, and he thought, maybe I should go once and check it out, you know, just go on your own and see this guy. So that's how he lands up in Prashanti. And so this is sometime in 95. And Bhagwan comes during the darshan, and you know, Swami, first 2-3 days, he just has darshans, casual darshans. Nothing happens to him. On the third day, Swami comes and he stands straight in front of him, right in front of him. And he says, I don't know what happened. That day, I just started crying. Something broke within. Like, damn, that broke. I don't know what is happening. I just cried. I don't know why I was crying, but I was just simply crying. And you know, that experience was such, so extraordinary that he went back and now he said, you know, I have to come back to this place. So, he was doing whatever he was doing, but you know, somehow, something about Swami had sort of captured him. So, he thought the best way to come back is, people told him, you know, you can come back as a Sevadal and all that. So, he joined the organization. So, next year in 1996, he came back as a Sevadal.
Okay.
And the night before he reached Parthi, you know, he get this dream where Swami says, what do you want? You know, he was on into the organization. He said, Swami, I don't want anything. I want your love and blessings, he says. Swami says, no, that is anyway there. What else you want? He says, no, Swami, I don't want anything, Swami. And then the dream is over. And then he thinks, oh, you know, I'm just thinking about Swami so much. I'm really, you know, all the time I keep thinking about this guy. So maybe that's why he's coming in my dreams. So next day he comes for darshan, 96 September. He sits in the mandir. And the guy who's sitting next to him in mandir, he's reading a book on Bhagwan. So, you know, out of curiosity, he just takes that book and he opens a page. And bang, it is written there. Whenever I come in your dreams, it is out of my will. It is not an accident. Okay, so he's like, oh my God,
I got my message.
And then Bhagwan comes. And you know, so he also just quickly writes a letter. When Bhagwan comes, Swami takes letters from people around him. And you know, like how it happens many times. So Swami then looks at him. And Swami shows both his hands, which are full of letters, and says, no room. No room for your letters. No place for your letter, Swami says. And he says, oh my God. And then, as Swami moves on, he takes some more letters. From some other guy. And then from some other guy. Hare, just now you said he has no space for me. For my letter. And now he's taking other people's letter. So that really puts him into deep self-introspection. Why did he say that? Which means he doesn't have space for me. He has space for someone else. And that really made him think so much that he felt, no, there is something that I have to do. Something that I have to do so that he creates space for me.
Beautiful.
I have to create space for him so that he will create space for me. And he say, and you know, he says, I have to do something. I have to do something drastic. And then and there, that day he decides that I will give up all this.
Wow.
I will give up taking bribes. I will give up non-veg, smoking. He was also into everything. You know, once you one evil, you'll, everything else comes like a chain. And the next day, Swami comes and Swami takes his letter.
Oh.
Immediately.
Beautiful.
And that was the turning point of his life. But he says it was not easy, you know.
Yeah.
He says that once he went back, actually he was supposed to be promoted to another job where he was, which was going to be really a money spinner. And he said if he was his former self, then
jumped at it.
Now when he went, actually that job didn't come to him. It went to someone else. He told, if I was my former self, I would have got really infuriated with the boss. I told, what are you doing with me and all that. But he said he was very calm now. And now he went to, you know, his clients and the shopkeepers and everyone. People said, what happened to him? He's not asking anything. I mean, people are worrying, are you sane? Are you fine? I mean, is it a game? Are you writing good things about us?
Is it your twin?
but somehow. But he says it was not easy because, you know, he was used to earning this much. And they had a different lifestyle and everything.
Right.
So cutting down was very difficult. He said he was really into financial problems. And he thought, how will he manage? And other people told, come on man, you are a sales tax, you are not a saint. I mean, what are you doing? You have got a daughter, you need, you think about the future. This is not how you are supposed to operate. A lot of pressures from everyone. But he said, no, I have told Swami. Everyone, he said that my life, my problems are not my problems. Sai Baba's problems. So I don't care. And with that steadfastness, for 3 years he struggled. Struggled to sort of have a normal life and, you know, life where he both ends meet with all his responsibilities, parents and everyone. But he never gave up. And eventually it happened that his wife also got a job as a teacher in the Sathya Sai School, Sathya Sai Vidya Vihar in Indore.
So beautiful.
Circle completed. And after that you should see him, you know, he's one of the most, I would say, vibrant personalities now.
Absolutely.
In Indore. Even at this age, you know, he does this ultra marathon, 51
marathons.
Kilometers.
Yes.
And you know, talking about habit, this is another reason why I'm mentioning about him is, you know, he, sometime back, he told this personally to me, you know, he had this blood pressure problem, you know, and in their family there was this history, a sad history of people, once they start getting blood pressure and eventually it becomes fatal in their family. And so once blood pressure happened to him, everybody in his family were very concerned and they said, you know, you start taking medication and all that. He didn't want to take medication. And he took advice from someone and he said, I will start running. So after 40s, after probably 40, 45, he started running. You know, and today he does ultra marathons.
And like, he wins also.
He wins 51 kilometers. And his blood pressure, within 6 months, 6 or 1 year, his blood pressure become normal. And it is normal from then.
Beautiful.
It just shows, you know, this habits, how they can change your life completely. I mean, I could not resist narrating this story. Because the transformation, you know, it's like a Ratnakara story. You know,
absolutely.
In today's times and
right.
What Swami can do and habits can do. There is so much hope. And actually to me, the greatest hope is, you know, the grace that can come on us. For in all these people, a little bit of earnestness.
Right.
And the amount of grace. Well, we still have one more paragraph.
I think we are
running short of time. Probably we will conclude it.
But the best part is, you know, it's just 3 lines or 4 lines of this book that we have just gone through just now.
Yeah.
And we can go on and on for so many hours.
Yes.
And still not understand what it completely signifies.
I think we should discuss this, the last paragraph, in the next session, because perhaps, you know, once we discuss that, then we probably will be able to put the entire first chapter in perspective.
Correct.
And try to understand what Bhagavan is trying to communicate.
Yes.
So maybe we'll keep that for the next session. So with prayers to Bhagavan and with gratitude for giving us this opportunity to dwell on his immortal message, we conclude this session. Dear listeners, if you have any queries or comments, as always, please feel free to write to us. Our email ID, listener@radiosai.org. We conclude this day-long Thursday Live. Thank you so much for being with us and do
keep sending in your feedback and emails. Thank you so much. Sign out.